From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The hit Netflix show 13 Reasons Why takes on some of the toughest issues teenagers can face: sexual assault, bullying, depression, and suicide. It's a largely first-person tale in the voice of a teenage girl who explains why she's about to take her own life and whom she blames. Fans believe that 13 Reasons Why gets people talking, but many parents and school counselors worry that vulnerable teens might get the wrong idea and think suicide is actually an option. This hour, On Point, 13 Reasons Why, and how we can talk about teen suicide and prevent it. You can join us on air or online. Have you watched the show? What message do you think it sends about teen suicide, and is it the right message? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or via Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And before we begin our show, a trigger warning. We will be discussing teen suicide and sexual assault. You may not want younger people listening in. Also, if any listeners are considering suicide or having suicidal thoughts, you need to reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. And let's begin now by listening to a little bit, a couple of excerpts from the Netflix series, 13 Reasons Why. Again, a dramatic story told largely in the voice of this girl who eventually takes her life. Her name is Hannah Baker. She's played in the series by Catherine Langford, and she records a series of tapes that outline the reasons why she took her own life. Here's the introduction to the first tape.
Hey, it's Hannah. Hannah Baker. Don't adjust your whatever device you're hearing this on. It's me. Live and in stereo. No return engagements. No encore. And this time, absolutely no requests. Get a snack. Settle in. Because I'm about to tell you the story of my life. More specifically, why my life ended.
And that's from the first episode. Later in that episode, Hannah meets her crush, Justin Foley. He's played by Brandon Flynn at a park late at night. They kiss, but then he snaps a picture that suggests something more happened. And when he shows his friends the picture at school the next day, they eagerly pass it around.
Picture's worth 1,000 words.
Public space. That's hot. Oh, yeah, we're sending that around.
No, right, stop. Seriously, hey. Hey, right, stop. Hey.
And that moment is enough for Hannah to be labeled the class slut, and she becomes the target of bullying and sexual harassment. And joining us now from Orlando, Florida, is Jacqueline Grimm. She is a high school senior. She's graduating Saturday from Lake Highland Preparatory School. She wrote an op-ed in USA Today headlined, "How 13 Reasons Why Gets Suicide Wrong." You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Jacqueline has experienced depression herself. She thinks this show is not healthy for teenagers with mental illness. Jacqueline, thanks so much for joining us and welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
So a lot of us, Jacqueline, haven't been in high school for a while. First of all, how true is this depiction of the high school experience in general terms, the sort of the petty comments, the behind-the-back comments, the bullying, the harassment? How much of that rings true in your own experience?
I think in some cases it does ring true. I think where the show goes wrong is making it seem larger than life. I don't think it's totally realistic to have all of these situations. And while there is bullying, I personally haven't seen it to the scale that the show shows it, although I do think it is out there.
Why do you think the show is as popular as it is among high school students?
I think it's a relatively entertaining show, although I personally didn't care for the show, I do see that it has entertainment value. And in many ways, it's very compelling. I think it's an interesting show, and it keeps people watching.
You know, I think one of the dominant impressions that I had in watching the show is the extent to which Hannah Baker, in telling this story, sort of had all these people whom she blamed sort of transfixed by it. Now, you have dealt with depression, and feel free, I hope, to share as much of your thoughts about that as you're able and willing to. What, as someone who experienced some of the same thoughts that Hannah evidently experienced, you know, what was your reaction to her expressing what she felt?
So, yeah, one of the problems I had with the show was the depiction of Hannah, after her death, having some sort of control over the people who wronged her during her life.
Right.
So with the tapes, she's able to have a voice where she wasn't being heard before. And she's also controlling them. I mean, metaphorically and literally, they're going to different places, they're listening to these tapes. And I think for someone who's experienced depression or suicidal ideation, that can look kind of appealing. And I think where the show didn't mention is, you know, when you do die, you don't have the kind of control that Hannah had. And so I think it's a kind of unrealistic and even romanticized depiction of what happens after suicide.
Now, Jacqueline, in your op-ed for the USA Today, you had a really powerful paragraph here. You said that you considered suicide for a number of years, starting when you were about 13 years old. You said, "I never imagined logistics, razor blades cutting delicate skin, the quick violence of a gunshot. What I saw in my mind was crying peers and thousands of flowers and people wishing they had reached out to me. I didn't want pain. I wanted control. And while watching the show, the bullying, the assault, and even the suicide itself didn't stand out to me, all I could focus on was the power the main character, Hannah, had after her death." This is what you say is the dangerous element of this, that it sort of suggests to vulnerable teenagers that by committing suicide, they're going to somehow gain power?
I think it is one of the problems with the show, yes. I think when I was personally watching the show, I can remember how I felt in the past. And I think if I had seen the show when I was younger, I might have come to that conclusion that, yes, Hannah got control. Maybe I can get control through this too. And I think when you struggle with depression and suicidal thoughts, there's a desperation that makes you think in a way that other people without depression don't think. And so you're not thinking logically. And so I think when you're watching a show like this, even though it might not seem logical that you would have control after death, you think anyways, oh, well, I am going to have control. So, yes, I definitely thought that was one of the problems I had with the show.
Now, the whole premise of the show, Jacqueline, is that there were 13 reasons, 13 people in her case who had responsibility for her committing suicide. These are, and you wrote this in your USA Today op-ed, these are essentially external reasons. How realistic is it to sort of think that there are people out there who are responsible for driving people to suicide?
I think when it comes to suicide, the large majority of people that do take their lives struggle with mental illness. And while different external circumstances like bullying certainly can contribute, I think the way the show portrayed it was that they were the cause. And again, it's 13 reasons. They were the reason. And I think it becomes dangerous when you start to say that a person can be the reason that someone decides to take their life. There's a lot more factors into it. And I think it also can kind of put blame on people, and people that have known other people that have taken their life, it puts blame on them where I don't think there should be blame. And I think in the show, there were definitely characters and definitely actions that needed to be held accountable. But I think you couldn't say that any one person was to blame.
Now, stand by, Jacqueline, because I want to go now to Liz, who's on the line calling from Marblehead, Massachusetts. And Liz, I know this is not your real name, but we want to hear what you are thinking today. Have you seen the show?
I saw the last two episodes, watched it with my daughter, who does suffer from depression and anxiety. And she's been struggling with that for a long time. But she did end up in the hospital recently, about a week after watching the show, and she had done something at school where she told, you know, she texted one of the girls that all the reasons why she felt like the girl had wronged her and that this was her tape. We ended up having to admit her into an inpatient program, and she's doing much better now. This was a few weeks ago, but you know, I completely agree with Jacqueline. The show is not going to force anyone or give them an idea to commit suicide, but it does have it says something different to kids who are already struggling with depression and who are already having these issues and ideations. And quite frankly, I think Netflix did a real disservice by offering this up as a binge watching thing for these kids to ingest without having, it was like a runaway train for parents. I can't certainly watch 12 hours of television in a day, and neither can the school counselor.
All right. Well, Liz, those are really important thoughts, and thank you so much for sharing them with us. We're talking about the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why and the impact it's having on teenagers and the way that we talk about suicide. Here is the theme song for the show 13 Reasons Why. Oh, In This World of Dread, Carry On by Eskimo. I'm Tom Jelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Tom Jelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking teen suicide today and the controversial Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. You can join our conversation. Are you a teenager who has experienced depression or suicidal thoughts? What do you make of the show? Parents, school counselors, how do you talk with teens about sexual assault and suicide? Does this show make it harder for you? Do you think this show is a good depiction of what can happen? Do you think it's helping to remove the stigma on mental health, or does it glamorize suicide? Join us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With us on the line is Jacqueline Grimm. She's a high school student in Orlando, Florida. We also have from New York, Dr. Jill Harkavy Friedman. She is a practicing psychologist and the vice president for research at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Dr. Jill Harkavy Friedman, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. And I also want to thank Jacqueline and Liz for talking about their own experience.
And that is, Jacqueline's insights are so important. We want to keep her on the line. We also have from Washington, Jill Cook. She's a former school counselor and current assistant director at the American School Counselor Association. And Jill, thanks to you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
So, Dr. Harkavy Friedman, you heard, as you say, both Jacqueline and Liz, our caller, give their reaction to this show, their concern that it sort of provides an unrealistic view of both what drives people to suicide and the glamour that may be, or the power that young people may think that this gives them. What were your reactions to the show to the extent that you've seen it?
Yes, well, I did watch the first 6.5 episodes, and I'm not one to watch violence, and so I decided after much thought not to watch the last few episodes with the sexual assault and the actual suicide. But I think I got a good feel for the film and for the ideas that were coming across. And I think both Jacqueline and Liz make some important points. One is that suicide is really complicated, and it's a result of many factors coming together, often in the context of things like bullying and sexual assault. But as Liz points out, generally, the person who's going to be at greatest risk is the one who's already struggling. We know that when you're in that suicidal state, your thinking is different. I think, again, Jacqueline really depicted that well. And so you can't really blame people. It's all about your internal process and reaching out to others for assistance. And I think one of the things in the show is that she never reached out because she didn't feel that she could. And that's what we have to change to start that conversation.
Well, speaking of that, we have a cut now here where she tried to reach out once. This is when Hannah sits down with her guidance counselor, Mr. Porter. She confides in him how hopeless and lost she feels.
It sounds like there's something that you need that you're not getting. So let's start there.
I need it to stop.
You need what to stop?
I need everything to stop. Just people, life.
Life?
And Jill Cook, you're someone who has worked as a school counselor. You are assistant director of the American School Counselor Association. May I ask you, do you think that the book and the series that grew out of it, what's your sense of how it depicts school counselors like Mr. Porter?
So school counselors certainly would not respond in that manner if a student such as Hannah came to them expressing those concerns. School counselors are ethically obligated when a student expresses ideas of harm to self that you have to tell. And what we want is schools and school districts to have plans and policies in place so that when you receive these students who are experiencing these struggles and issues, that you have a plan, a process for referral to outside agencies, that you're communicating with parents. And what Mr. Porter, the school counselor in the show, did is ignored those signs. And it's for our members who do this work for students every day. It was very distressing to see a school counselor depicted in this way on the 13th episode. In fact, Mr. Porter is the 13th reason.
Right. But you say that counselors are ethically obligated to act, you know, to respond to a prompt like that. But how realistic is that? I mean, how many school counselors actually perform their work, you know, in line with what they need to do ethically and professionally and personally?
It's hard to say a specific percentage, but my hope would be all of them. It is part of the training school counselors receive. Most school counselors have master's degrees in school counseling and receive training in this. And so it is our ethical imperative to make sure when we hear students crying out for help, when we see the warning signs, when teachers come to us because they've seen warning signs, we need to be equipped to respond and get those students the help they need.
Well, Jacqueline Grimm, again, to you and your own experience. Now, Hannah in this show, and we heard it just in that segment, has a hard time trusting the school counselor and her teachers. I'm wondering what your experience was. Do you feel like high schools, including yourself, have a hard time with that? And I think we have lost Jacqueline. But again, Jacqueline, are you still there?
I am still here. Sorry.
Did you hear my question?
I did, yes. To answer that, I would say that my experience is quite the opposite from Hannah's. I think schools, at least, like I said, at my school, have been really accommodating. And I think people are, teachers and counselors are able to see warning signs. And especially if a student was to approach them about an issue like this, I can't imagine any of my counselors responding in the same way. So I would say, I think when people watch that, if they haven't gone to their counselor, they may imagine that their counselor would respond like that. But I know in my experience, that isn't the case.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. And Jill Huckabee Friedman, you've been researching suicidal ideation in teenagers for many years now. I know that mental health in teenagers was a stigmatized topic for a long time. Now we have a hit series that deals with it. Is that a sign that this topic is no longer taboo? And might that be sort of a silver lining or a good thing even about this series?
Well, initiating the conversation about suicide is helpful. I'm not sure that that's what was depicted in this show about bringing it to the forefront and having conversations. So there's the general sense that we can talk about suicide now. In fact, we must talk about it if somebody is struggling. We need to learn to listen about it, and we need to set up, as Jill Cook said, structures in which people can get help when they need help. We did a Harris poll with the Anxiety and Depression Association of America and the Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention. And we found actually that kids are much more open to talking about mental health than their parents and older people. So they see seeking help as a sign of strength. So it's not just about the stigma, but it's if you are hurting or you're not feeling well, or you're going to a dark place of thinking about suicide, you can actually get help for that and feel better. Just a short while ago, people didn't realize that you could prevent suicide. And now there's hope. And as we learn more and we develop more interventions, there's even greater hope. So I think that's what's opened the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And it's good that you mentioned that. We should point out at this point, it's a good time to remind our listeners that if you are experiencing suicidal thoughts or feelings, you can always reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Their number is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. And Dr. Huckabee-Friedman, are teenagers, is this a growing problem? What kind of trends do you see with respect to teenage suicide? We're certainly, as you say, hearing a lot more about it.
Well, that's an interesting question because when I first started surveying teens, being the first to ask, the rates of ideation and attempts were shocking to me. I thought we might find one or two people. And we actually found that almost 9% of kids had reported a suicide attempt, and they could give us the details. When we do the Youth Behavior Risk Survey now, we come out with the same numbers. They're almost identical. But I think people are talking about it more. I think when people die by suicide now, it's more likely to be recorded as a suicide death. So it's a little bit hard to tell. The rates have gone up slightly for young people, perhaps, but not as dramatically as we would think if there was a surge in suicide.
I want to go now to back to the show, back to the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. In this scene, one of Hannah's classmates, Alex Standall, played by Miles Heitzer, tells the main character, Clay Jensen, who's played by Dylan Minnette, about his regret over a rumor that Hannah stole him away from his girlfriend.
So not only did everyone think that Hannah gave it up for me, I took away her best friend. And who knows? If she had a friend, maybe...
It's okay, man.
No, it's not. It's not okay. You want it to be okay because then you get off the hook. But you're losing your... And you want to think that whatever you did, it couldn't be the reason that Hannah killed herself. But the truth is that I did. I killed Hannah Baker. And Justin killed Hannah Baker. And Jessica. And you. We all killed Hannah Baker.
Jacqueline Grimm. We all killed Hannah Baker. Clearly, one of the points in this series is that when someone commits suicide or even is considering committing suicide, people around her are in some sense responsible and perhaps should be held accountable for their actions. What's your thoughts about that? And that cut in particular, that clip in particular, really underscores that. We all killed Hannah Baker.
Yes, I think that while many of the characters in the show could be held responsible for the actions, I think it's too far to say that they are to blame and that they are the ones that killed Hannah Baker. And I think, like I said before, suicide is more complicated than that. It's not at the fault of any one person. And I think while we can all work to look for signs and signals like that, I don't think it's anyone's responsibility if a person does decide to take their life.
That's Jacqueline Grimm. She's a high school student in Orlando, Florida. I'm Tom Gelton. This is On Point. And I want to go to you now, Jill Cook. Again, from that clip, we get at least a sense that the students who knew Hannah are now sort of questioning the way that they dealt with her and whether in some ways they have may have been responsible for her death. Is that not a helpful thing for students to consider, what impact their words have on a student's feelings and emotions?
So certainly, as Jacqueline was saying, any one person isn't responsible for somebody taking someone's life. And once someone does die by suicide and it's impacting the life of a high school in this instant, again, we want to make sure that we have procedures in place to help these students who may be having these questions as presented in this clip. We want to make sure that there are counselors available and school psychologists and school social workers so we can talk with students about processing this information and educating them also about suicide. So again, we want to, the thing that schools can do is have these policies and procedures in place all the way from the prevention piece and implementing curriculum to teach students about coping skills and ways to deal with peers and who you can go to when you have concerns about yourself or others. And all the way through, if something does happen, how do you deal with it? How do you support the students? How do you mitigate this loss for the community, and so you can all move forward.
And we have a lot of listeners who want to weigh in. Many of you have seen this show and have thoughts about it. First of all, let's go to Jennifer, who is calling from Portland, Maine. Hello, Jennifer. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Tom. Thank you. I'm actually a 27-year-old mom, and I watched the show in a couple of days, and the show really jolted me back to my high school experience, and I related with Hannah a lot. I dealt with sexual abuse, depression, this isolation, and self-mutilation, and all these things that I think that people aren't talking enough about. And luckily, I was able to, make a journey to recovery and happiness. And unfortunately, the story ends with not that. So I appreciate what the show has been able to do. It's a wake-up call for, I think, adults especially about what we should be talking about, how we should approach children and talk to our kids about what they're watching. And I think we're dealing with parents that are unfamiliar with cyberbullying. They grew up in an age where that wasn't an issue. And I felt like the show really highlighted how cyberbullying can affect a person and how can truly isolate a person.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. Jill Cook, a reaction to what Jennifer had to say.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And the whole piece of technology, and interestingly enough, the old school technology with the tapes that heightens young people's experiences is certainly prevalent in this. And again, I think what this does for us is gives us an opportunity, as indicated, it seems to be the older folks who are not as comfortable talking about this. If our young people are willing to talk about mental illness and issues they are having, then let's equip the school staff, the teachers, the parents, the community members to feel comfortable about having these open and honest and non-judgmental conversations with teens about what they're experiencing and about what they're feeling.
Are you recommending this show, Jill?
Certainly not for students who may have had a suicide attempt or who may have a mental illness or struggling with other trauma issues or sexual assault issues, but certainly for some, it may be a helpful way to open the conversation.
Okay, Jill Cook, a assistant director of the American School Counselor Association, and please stay with us. We're discussing 13 reasons why and how to have conversations about suicide and mental health. This is 13 Tapes by Eskimo from the soundtrack of 13 Reasons Why. I'm Tom Gelton in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. The Netflix show 13 Reasons Why has inspired discussions about teenage mental health in schools and families. You can join our conversation. Has 13 Reasons Why inspired you, your family, or your school to talk about these issues? Teens and parents, what do you think about the way your school handles suicide? Follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And let me read just a quickly, some of the comments that we've received via Twitter. Veronica writes, as a family survivor of suicide, this show gave me peace. It sparks conversation. Michael writes, this show was meant to be watched with children, not by them, in order to provoke a long overdue discussion about social behavior today. Carly complains, on the show, they never once provided resources to viewers. If they are suicidal, they should have displayed the suicide hotline number at the beginning and end of every show. And finally, Kitty writes, I can see how it could be triggering for some, but at the same time, everyone is different. I have been suicidal. I was able to watch the show without incident. Did it make strong feelings arise in me? Yes, but it was supposed to. And to help us along in our conversation, we have Jacqueline Grimm on the line from Lake Highland Preparatory School in Orlando. She wrote an op-ed in USA Today called How 13 Reasons Why Get Suicide Wrong. You can link to it on our website at onpointradio.org. We also have Jill Cook, former school counselor and assistant director of the American School Counselor Association, and Dr. Jill Harkavy-Friedman, a practicing psychologist and vice president for research at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And several times today, we've reminded you that if you are having suicidal thoughts, please reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They're at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. And let's go now to some of the many people who have called in with their own thoughts about the program, the series. First, Adrian from Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Adrian.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking the call. I want to thank you and your producers for covering this topic. I think it's incredibly important. So basically, I want to echo a lot of what is already being said, I think. I haven't watched the entire show. I watched the first half of it. I found it to be unsettling and disturbing, coming from a background of having had a brother who died by his own hand after severe bullying. As a consequence of his death, I was then bullied all the way through high school and had to drop out my senior year. So I think the show does a very, very good job of shining a light on that aspect. The problem that I'm concerned about is, having been somebody who has dealt with suicidal ideation many, many, many times in my life, it plays as a revenge fantasy in my mind, where what we're seeing is, if you have been wronged by people and you're sad, like, you can get the best revenge possible by just leaving a killer note, you know, and everybody's going to realize how terrible they were. And I feel like that's the same sort of mentality that we're seeing in, like, the school shooting situation with a lot of these kids, where it's about revenge. And I guess its heart, I think, was in the right place, but the way that they approached it was inadvertently an advertisement for revenge through suicide. And I think that there is a nuance that requires a level of critical thinking that, number one, teenagers have not been skilled in yet. They have not been schooled in how to think that critically. And secondarily, when you're depressed and when you're suicidal, the ability to think critically is definitely impeded. So I think the show ultimately is kind of dangerous unless it is watched in tandem with somebody that can discuss this with these teenagers.
Oh, that's so interesting, Adrian. On the one hand, you think the show hits home for you. On the other hand, you think it's dangerous for teenagers to watch. I want to get Dr. Jill Harkavy-Friedman to respond to Adrian's comments. Jill?
Well, I think the fact that that we're all talking about it, as Adrian says, is very important to have those conversations. The conversation, though, I'd like to see it head towards understanding what really goes into suicide, the many factors, the mental health component that, let's face it, when people are feeling well, they don't take their lives. And so we have to look at people and figure out how are they feeling, how are they thinking, what's going on in their lives. And we need to touch base with each other. When we see a change in somebody that we care about, we need to acknowledge that with them. Oh, I notice you're not sleeping, or you haven't gotten your homework in, or you're withdrawing from other people. And so it's great that this conversation has started. It can also scare people. I think the goal was to have people take responsibility for their own behavior, but in the end, the person who is struggling also needs to take responsibility and get the help they need, or at least reach out to someone and say, I'm struggling, and let somebody help them. I also just want to say that, particularly for kids, there is the crisis text line, which you can text TALK 741741, and you can have a conversation by text anonymously if you're feeling stressed. So I just wanted to add that in.
Well, that's important. A lot of young people prefer text. Give us that number again, Jill.
It's TALK 741741, and you just text that, and somebody will respond to you.
Thank you so much. I want to go now to Josephine, who's on the line from Guilford, Connecticut. Josephine, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much, Tom. This conversation is fantastic and relevant, and it's been a pleasure to be listening to you. I just I want to say right off the bat that I survived the things that the main character survived. I also survived attempted suicide. And I worked my way through that and became a healthy individual and a counselor. I'm retired. I have two children, 31 and 11, and my 31-year-old attempted suicide in college. We also lost my husband to suicide. So this subject greatly impacted our family's life. And this show is very triggering, but I just, you know, first of all, the word why. Why implies blame. Why is in the title? There is no other kind of death, none, in which you say, oh, my husband passed, my daughter passed, my uncle passed, and someone says, oh, what from? And you say, cancer, a car accident, some illness, and they say, why? It's horrible survivor's guilt. It's such a complicated thing. I agree with all of your callers in that this show spoke to me personally. And I would never, ever, ever recommend it for a young person that didn't have someone to help them navigate it, because there are no suicide prevention information offered, as you have on your show. Thank you so much. And they do not address the complication, the mental illness, the unhealthy brain. They do not use the labels depression and anxiety, even on the main character, which, you know, adults are afraid of, more or less teenagers who don't want to be peer pressured because they're different. They just missed the boat here big time.
Thank you so much, Josephine, for sharing those personal stories. And we really are pleased that you have been able to deal with all that you've had to deal with so successfully. And I want to put that same question to Jacqueline Grimm, the high schooler in Orlando, Florida, because Jacqueline, you have shared with us that you considered suicide. You got over it. What did it take for you to work through that crisis in your own life?
Well, one of the things I mentioned in my op-ed as well was, I think professional help, for me at least personally, was the most important part of getting better. And I think getting treatment is definitely an option. And I think in so many ways, depression and mental illness is treatable. And so for me personally, going through that really helped me. And I think that's another thing the show missed out on. They didn't include, you know, the option of treatment, the option of calling a hotline and things like that.
Well, Jacqueline, I don't know if you need to get back to class or not. You're still in high school. You're going to be graduating on Saturday, right? We're going to let you go now. Thanks so much. Your insights and experiences that you've shared with us have been so valuable. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
And Jill Cook, you've heard now such a variety of reactions to this show. Many people agree that it hits home, and yet they are concerned that it is dangerous. That seems to be a comment that we're getting an awful lot.
That's correct. And the topic is a difficult one to talk about. But I think what we heard also is, so we know young people have watched it, are going to watch it. So if we can hopefully put out there that it would be wonderful for the parents to watch it with their young person and then have these conversations, again, those open, non-judgmental conversations, and be willing to take the conversation wherever the teen wants it to go. And then from the school setting, certainly this is something that's showing up in schools. Teens are talking about it. So also, how do we equip the teachers and the school staff to have these conversations with young people about these topics? And I'd like to touch on just what Jacqueline talked about. The show does miss the mark in terms of the underlying mental illness that Hannah in particular seems to be experiencing. And again, we want to make sure that the adults in the lives of teens are aware of the warning signs and are aware of where they can get help, because intervention works. We want to give students the scaffolding they need, the emotional coping scaffolding they need, so that they can hopefully become healthy adults like many of these callers today.
Jill Cook is Assistant Director of the American School Counselor Association and a former school counselor in North Carolina from 1992 to 1999, also an assistant principal at a middle school, at a couple of middle schools, so she has a lot of experience dealing with these issues. I'm Tom Gelton. This is On Point. And as Jill Cook mentioned, this series has really provoked a lot of discussion by high school students, and those discussions have gotten a lot of media attention. Let's hear from Jayla, who is a student at John F. Kennedy High School in Maryland. She told the PBS NewsHour that the series, in her mind, in her opinion, does a good job of showing the impact of social media on teens.
I really feel like it's important for adults to know how much social media impacts us now. It's a different time, and social media is one of the biggest reasons why suicide happens nowadays.
One of the biggest reasons that suicide happens is social media, according to Jayla. Dr. Harkavy Friedman, what do you think about that?
Well, I think there are a lot of external things and events that can precipitate suicidal ideation and behavior. And we're always trying to understand, why does somebody take their lives? And what we see are these events, social media, bullying, etc. But we have to look deeper than that, because many people have these experiences. There are millions of people on social media, they're not taking their lives. But we want to understand it, and so those are the things we see, and so we think that was the cause. But I think if we really want to understand it, we have to think about some of the lifetime things that go on for people, like family history, early stress, chronic pain or chronic illness, and then the more immediate things, such as being in an episode of depression or being intoxicated or having a trouble with drugs or alcohol. And those things, then you're faced with a precipitating event, and it feels really different than when you're feeling well. And that, I think, is the difference. You know, Jacqueline talked about how your thinking changes. And what we know is that people are less able to think outside of this kind of tunnel vision they get when they're in such pain and desperation that they think nothing will help. And so that speaks to, I just want to say one thing about binge watching the show. That's probably something you want to avoid. Think about it. You're using the show to kind of escape from things. And whenever we go deeper and deeper and deeper, what are we doing? We're kind of escaping reality and trying to focus in on something different. Mm-hmm. But this is so dark, and there's no hope or alternative there, that it's preferable to watch it, if you're going to watch it, with your child, with a friend, and also one episode at a time.
We have time for one more caller, Amelia, on the line from South Carolina. Hello, Amelia.
Hi, Tom.
Have you seen the show?
Sorry?
Have you seen the show?
Yes, yeah. I watched the first half of the show. I had to stop watching because it was too triggering for me. It caused me to have a lot of thoughts of my past. It caused me to, it triggered me into a depression that caused me to self-harm for the first time in over a year. So it just put me in a really bad place, and I wanted to talk about that.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, and I hope you're okay now. I'm sure you've heard the numbers that we've been giving out, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. So you think the show is triggering. You think kids need to be careful if they're going to watch it.
I think so. I think that the show doesn't really let kids know if you're not in a good place, if you're dealing with mental illness, if you're dealing with depression or trauma, that you probably shouldn't watch this show right now. And I think that that's something that they really should put that message out, or they should put those numbers in the show to help kids understand, like, there's other options other than, you know, self-harm and suicide and things like that. Because, I mean, I relapsed, and relapse is part of recovery. I'm in recovery. A lot of kids that are watching the show might not be in that place yet.
Well, thank you so much for sharing those thoughts with us, Amelia, and I hope you stay on the path that you're on. We're going to have to end it there. I want to thank our guests, Dr. Jill Harkavy-Friedman, Vice President for Research at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Thank you so much, Dr. Harkavy-Friedman.
Thank you so much.
And Jill Cook, the Assistant Director for the American School Counselor Association. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you, Tom.
And thanks also to Jacqueline Grimm, who called in from Florida, a high school student there. You can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, On Point Radio. We go out to Only You by Selena Gomez. She's the executive producer on the show. She recorded the song for the 13 Reasons Why soundtrack. I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Oh.